Mr. Ver, Reel 12. We were talking about your leave in Cairo.
We've been to the pyramids and we came back. So we had two or three nice days there. We went to a club at night, a nightclub, where you were playing with a clip joint, really. You went in and these girls came and said, "We'll have a drink back in the street anyway, don't you?" Theirs was coloured water and yours, then they buy a package of cigarettes at exorbitant price on your bill. But generally speaking, we enjoyed ourselves. The day before we went back, I called for my watch at the jeweller's and he said, "Oh, it wasn't quite ready. Could I call back tomorrow?" So I've got to go back tomorrow. "What time did you go?" So I said, 1 o'clock train, something like that. "Well, if you come about 12 o'clock, it should be ready by then." So went about 12 o'clock. "Yes, it's ready." Got it out, showed it to the tire collector. 75 piastres, I think it was. Paid him and dashed for the train. On the train, on the way back, haven't been touched. It just said it correct, put the time right when they gave me it back. Anyway, that was it. That was our leave.
Did you see a lot of base troops once during Cairo, base soldiers who had never seen the action?
Well, probably. But
you didn't get involved with them?
No, I didn't get involved. Just there were four or five of us on the wall if we went around together. I'd say we hadn't that long few days. We saw the pyramids and that's about it. I always regretted not going to the Cairo Museum. I don't mean the Museum of Hygiene, I mean the Cairo Museum. I always regretted not going there and spending a bit of time there, but we didn't. We weren't bothered about anything like that at that time.
Were there a lot of military police around and keep an eye on you?
There were, but we were never troubled. They never troubled us at all, really. I think there'd been some trouble there, but I think there were many in Australia, wrecked Kairos, that, but we didn't have any trouble at all, really. You could have had, because in some of these places you went into, these so-called clubs, nightclubs, where you were being robbed, more or less, robbed blind, it was easy for people to lose the temper and cause a fracas, you know, but our particular party didn't, we were okay. But that was it, we went back then to the same camp. And
where did you move to after that?
Then from there we moved through, we were booked by a truck, through to across the Sinai Desert to Palestine and Israel now. I can't remember whether it went direct. I know we finished up in Tel Aviv. There was a bit of bother between the Arabs and the Jews, and a bit of unrest, and there was a curfew, and we had to patrol, and so then of course a curfew, do patrols. I think it was just in Tel Aviv, because you used to get these Arab lads that sort of torment you and get you to chase them, and they could nip across the road into Jaffa, which was the port of Jaffa. And that wasn't under curfew, so you couldn't chase them over there, and knew that, I suppose. But we were billeted in a gymnasium. We got the odd day to a place for tea, cups of tea, call it the Ark, probably they meant the Ark of the Covenant, I don't know, but they call it the Ark, and it was just more or less WVS, Israeli style sort of thing. And that's about all we marched there, and with a cup of tea and cakes, and that was it, and marched back, and we didn't really get out at all. Then
Did you have any contact with the civilians other than what you were saying, the young lads throwing things at you?
No, not really. As I say, we weren't there very long, actually. I can't remember. We were kept in the, in this gymnasium, school gymnasium, in the main hall, sort of thing. And we weren't allowed out, really. Except we weren't out on patrol at night. So the only contact you made was if you came across anyone that was breaking on a night when they shouldn't have been out. Otherwise, apart from going to this arc, we didn't have any contact with anyone, really.
Had you been given any instructions on what to do if you did contact civilians after curfew?
Well, after curfew, we had to bring them in. We had to bring anyone that found out on the street to arrest them and take them in. We put the cat out or something like that and nabbed him and took him in. But that's about all. It was a very hectic period for us. That it was pretty quiet, really. It wasn't the same sort of trouble that we're having these days. Most of that time.
What else were you doing in Palestine?
Well, we were training. We went to a camp. I think from telling you, went to a camp near Lake Tiberias, Galilee. Camp 80, I think they call it. We used to go training from there up into the mountains around about there. There were some Palestine police barracks up in the hills. And we do training, sort of what battles and approach marches and this sort of thing up the hills, the mountains. Well, it's like we've been doing in Italy previously.
Were you working with tanks?
Not at that time. We did later. We moved into Syria, and it was there. I think probably the hills there were more similar to the hills we were going to encounter when we got back to Italy. There were lower hills. Like previously, you couldn't use tanks. It was too steep. We were working with tanks then in Syria. Syria, that's right, yes. We did get the leave to Damascus on the day. I was lucky to get a day in Beirut. But it was general training. There were Gurkha troops next camp to where we were, and they were doing the same thing, more or less. We were there until we moved then back to Egypt. We moved back to Palestine, I think. Nathania and Haifa.
You said you'd received drafts at that time to make up for your losses. Where were they coming from?
They'd come out from England.
Which regiments?
There's a chap I go to see now, and I think he'd come from a DLI. The other ones, we did get some from the ex-ACAC regiments, Royal Artillery, but I don't think we got them at that particular time. I think the mainly infantry reinforcements we got then. I'm not sure. I know someone from the DLI. What battalion? I don't know. Probably some holding battalion back home.
Were they good standard? Good quality?
I suppose it was the same as we were. Same as we were when we came out. The sort of you eventually just merge in, and you're all more or less the same then. I think we were all one quality, mediocre, I suppose. But I should say that whatever unit you join, you're assimilated in, and you eventually become one of the mass, and no better or no worse than anyone else, I think.
Did you know you were going to return to Italy yet again?
No, I thought we were going home again. When we got to Egypt, my brother was in Egypt, he'd been out from 1942, and I didn't know just where he was, because of course he used to write to me, but obviously it's just CMF, not CMF, MEF, Middle East Forces. So I got onto the intelligence officer when we landed. I said, I wonder if you could find out where my brother's unit is. Anyway, he came up back later and he said either Tobruk, which was quite a way off, so I thought, I'll forget it. Anyway, we went up into Palestine and Syria, came back to the same camp, and we were in two men tents, bivouac, and by that time it was hot, it was talking about July, and too hot to go in your tent, like ovens. And I went in one of these shower blocks, and I was sat in one of those, there's no water on, but I was sat there, and my brother walked in, you know. And apparently he'd heard that our division had arrived in the Middle East, and he'd made inquiries to find out where we were. And in fact, he wasn't at Tobruk, he was at Suez. And they were sending a truck from his unit at Suez. He'd transferred, he was in the Marine Air. And they were sending a truck to Tel Al Kebir, which was a big depot, armless depot. Something. They were sending some rifles to be calibrated, something like that. And he got a lift and dropped off and called it to see me. And it was quite a pleasant time, and he had to go back when his truck came back. So I said, I'll come back tomorrow, see you tomorrow. So the following day, on the motorbike, and it came and went down to a bazaar and had some, had a drink of sherbet or something like that, it was, and passed a quiet nice afternoon. He said, I'll come back again tomorrow. No, thank you. Anyway, when he came back the following day, we'd gone, we were back to the docks, everything. When he'd gone back, there was no sign we'd been there, and he told us, he says, I think you're going home. He says, somebody that I know, he says that you're just going the same route as what the, I think it was the 50th day or the 50th, or somebody. He says, you're just going, says you'll be going back home from here. And of course, I told everybody else, and you know. So I got back on the boat and, of course, finished up Naples, I think.
You'd lost Colonel Preston by now.
Yes, so we got Colonel Johnson, I think.
Worrell? Colonel Worrell?
Was it? Oh, I thought it was Johnson. I thought the commander was Johnson. It became Colonel, I'm sure. Anyway, Worrell. I know Worrell was Colonel at one time. I probably got the time wrong.
And you returned. It must have been a bit of a disappointment to...
Oh, it was, yeah.
...to be coming back to the same place
it was,
again.
Yeah. We thought we were going home, you know, we thought we'd seen the last of Italy, but we were looking forward to, of course, the second front had started while we were in Egypt, and we thought, oh, it'd be a piece of cake after Italy, you know, won't bother about that, we're going to leave it at all. Anyway, we finished back in Naples.
What happened to you then after going to Naples? This was, I believe, July, early July,
yeah.
Was it?
Well, we went from Naples to a camp at Bassado, they call it. I don't know where the concentration area but anyway, we're at this place, Bassado. And it was at this place where this chap I was telling you about had got his boots repaired and got out of, you know, he was gloated, it was aired on the news what was happening up at the front, and he was saying, oh, you fought it when you get up there. No, that would so be it. Anyway, we got to Bastardo, we were there for a while, I think. We were with various sports and a bit of training, and it was quite a pleasant period. Then from there, we went Solo del Piano. I think it was a place near Frozzy, a place called Frozzy, no, no. And that was where we were going to start off from to, that's the next sort of stretch, the Gothic line. Remember that, it was today, yesterday, where we were waiting at Isola del Piano, a little bit of a holler somewhere, nothing happened, it was quiet. And I can remember reading a magazine, Life magazine, something like that it was, about boxers, how the brains get moved. You know, the funny thing, I can remember that quite clearly, so I was sat reading it now and talking about it to the lads. And that's where we set off from. That was the start line, more or less. I don't know just what date we did set off, but I remember we were the first platoon, and our section was the leading section. And of course, I was leading the section, so I felt like I was stepping into the jaws, because there was nobody in front of me, you know, only the Germans, I suppose.
What terrain were you moving through?
It was quite pleasant. It was not very hilly. Not very hilly. It was fairly flattish, as far as I remember. It wasn't dead flat. It was awesome, because we had to set off. I think the first day we set off, we just walked and nothing happened. You know.
How does a section company battalion move along a road, along the road that you were going, I believe?
We always go in sections. Well, we always did. I've got to say everybody. We're in sections. Usually, what we call aircraft formation, which is one section on that side of the road, then staggered the other section on the other.
In single file?
In single file, yeah. In single
file. Do you put scouts out ahead of you? Or
no, it's just the first section of the scouts, I suppose. And the first man's the first one to cop it if anything happens.
And you were that first man?
And I was the first man that first day, anyway. Yeah. But nothing did happen. It was quiet and pleasant and lovely weather. And that's the sort of thing I used to think. Lovely weather. To get killed a day like this, you know. You know, I used to think, I suppose everybody else, you think it's too nice a day to get it to up today, you know. Anyway, we went on and there was nothing at all. There were some of these lads that had joined us when we came out of the line and got back to the Middle East with it. Ooh, is this what you call fighting? Piece of cake, is this, you know. Then we came and we were going along the shore. There was a, looked like a sack or something in front of us. And when we got up here, it was a half of a body, German it was, I think, just his top half. And of course, that when they saw that upset a little bit then, they realised that there was a war on. And they'd been a bit loath to dig in, you see. I mean, we always used to dig in. If we shot for the night, we used to dig in. And they didn't fancy digging in, because they said there was nothing happening anyway. After they saw him, they dug the trench, it was okay then. Don't know if that was the second day or the third, where we then to advance and take a village called Petriano. And we were seemed to be out in front again there, because we got into this village, and when we looked back, there were tanks and troops. So they were going to attack. We actually thought that we were going to be attacked by our own troops anyway. It must have all been organised, so they didn't know. We got into this village, and there was no German, nobody there, no Germans there. We just occupied it, but we hadn't been in very long when they shelled it, and we took a few casualties with shell fire. We'd actually left. We'd taken our packs off in the room in the house, and we'd gone out and we're outside, and a shell came right through this room and blew all the packs. There were nobody in as it happened, since. But there were some of the shells landed, and there were casualties. I think one of the officers, Major Duffy, I think. I don't know who was under that tent. Yeah, anyway, that was Petriano.
Were there any civilians in the village?
No, I didn't see any. I think they'd paid off.
When you moved into houses like that to stay for a spell, is there a hunt for booty or picking up items, personal
not
items?
Really, the only thing I ever took was a shirt. Well, it was like a woman's blouse, actually. Mine was all ripped. I caught it on something in the bag or something and ripped it. I thought I'll have to get someone. And, all I could find in this house was a khaki black. Silly, I suppose. Thought it'd have to be khaki with if I get taken prisoner, all else I'm but khaki, they'll think I'm a spy. Think of some daft stuff. It had to be khaki. Only thing I found was this, it must have been a woman's blouse, khaki colour, and I wore that until we came out of the line again. But that wasn't sort of loopy, it was about looking for something to wear. No, I don't think people, really speaking, there was nothing. Most of those people didn't have much, did nothing. There were only grew a few tomatoes or something like that, and the houses were, they're just the basics. Yeah, did nothing really.
Did it become easier to experience shelling and withstand it?
I don't think it ever became easier. No, I don't think it became easier. I think you just... Each time, I think it got a bit worse because you thought when you got over the last lock, eventually one's going to get you. I remember when I joined... When we landed at Salerno, there was about half a dozen of us that went through a long period of time. And others were being wounded and killed and then replaced. And then the replacements would get wounded and killed. So you were thinking all the time, well, law of averages, it's bouncing in me. So, which it was like it came. Like all those times, we sort of got through for a long period. But eventually we did all get wounded. You're not on your mind, I say each time was one time nearer to the time you're going to cop something. And I think that probably went through your mind. I don't think it got any easier, really.
What happened next, after Patriano?
Oh, I've just got to look. With a short rest then, after that one called for Patriano. And then we went back in, and we were ordered to go up this hill. We're supposed to be going through the Sherwood Foresters, passing through them. They'd already gone up through this hill. They'd taken some position at the top, I think. And we were going up, and we came to a minefield. And it was marked. There was just one strand of wire, and there was these signs, skull and crossbones, and actual meaning on it. So it was obvious it was mine. So we got to that, the first section, and what we're going to do now. Apparently the foresters were supposed to be sending a guide to guide us up through them, so made our way through. So anyway, this guy hadn't arrived, so this one was company commander. I said, push on, through the minefield. So the first section, can't remember his name now, Corporal Welsh, they ducked under the wire and gingerly walked through and to the other side. Then the next section followed. We were the third section, actually. The next section followed. And they hadn't gone 2 yards when Ulan stepped on a mine. Well, there were shoe mines, after what they called shoe mines, which were just a wooden box with wooden pegs in, which held the top half from dropping onto the bottom half. So the weight of a man break the pegs, allow the top part to go with the igniter to ignite the charge and blow your footer. So they stepped on one of these. Lad lost his foot. Another one was had it. He was killed, but it must have been something that looked at him in the like in the throat. And then the other one, I think, was wounded. So there were three of them there. Just they had gone a yard through his wife. So we called for the stretcher bearers. Stretcher bearers came, two of them. With the stretcher, they ducked under the wire. They stepped on them. So that another lad, stretcher bearer, he had his foot off as well. So anyway, we've got them, managed to get them back out. So the company commander then called the first section back. Said, "Oh, we'll wait for the guy to come back." Well, if you'd have seen chaps walking on eggs, I mean. You imagine, it was obvious there was mines there now, now that the two got off. And they'd got to come back through on the same track. Well, this corporal, he didn't know where to put his feet, but the other lads knew where to put theirs, they put theirs wherever his foot is. Anyway, they all came back and they didn't set another mine off. I think he lost his foot later on.
It must be a frightening experience to do that, to be sent into a minefield in effect.
It was the most thing that I hated most, or dreaded most, put it that way, was mines. I hated mines. But, I mean, it sounds silly, but I wasn't so much bothered about being killed. I was bothered about being killed, but I'd rather be being killed than maimed. I always dreaded that, being maimed. Having part of your face carried away with a shell fragment or something like that. I also used to dread mines because you couldn't see them until you stepped on one, and there were that many ingenious ways of setting them up with trip wires and wires that if you cut them, if you pulled them it went off, and the other way if you cut it went off, and others if you just stood on it went off, and others if you lifted this one it would send another one off a couple of yards away. So it was a thing that mines, I dreaded, but S mines especially, they were a shrapnel mine, which you stood on that and it jumped about 5 feet in the air and then exploded with about 350 ball bearings inside, which went out that way. So you'd really no chance. I mean, you stood on one of them and that was it. So, I mean, you did have a chance with shells. I mean, it either exploded near or it didn't. With a mine, if you stood on it, that was it. You lost your foot.
Did you ever get involved in picking mines yourself?
No, I didn't. We had practice of doing them, but we didn't.
It's with a bayonet?
Yeah, with a bayonet. We had bayonet and tape. And, you know, one man, one man was doing the they jabbed in, the other man was marking the where you cleared, that sort of thing. But it was really only practice. Never actually did it on that. We did have to do, I did actually have to do, but I mean you did have to do if it came to it, you were stuck and you found you were in a mine. I mean, same as that, what I've just been talking about. Really speaking, we should have had them doing that, but they were in a hurry. So they have come back and, you know, I mean, really speaking, they should have given them a chance to feel the way back for them, but they're in a hurry now because they wanted to get through, I think to go through to relieve the foresters, so we went back, then carried along down the road parallel to the minefield, and then we'll fight on them again lower down.